Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, welcome on into the post-game show here on the OBR stream. That was disappointing, to say the least, as we're waiting for our glorious host, Andrew Spade, to be with us here and kick things off, but we can at least talk for a moment here. So, disappointing loss. Lots of things to talk about here. I thought that, you know, Stefanski coached a... I see a lot of hate for him on Twitter and in the chat. Listen, I thought he called a hell of a game to have them where they were. There were some situational decision-making stuff that we can go over. That I disagreed with, but I thought that he called a pretty good game. PJ throws the ball into a guy's helmet on 3rd and 3. Hard to blame coaching on that. But we'll go over it all, I'm sure, as Andrew is here now.
Hey, sorry about that, Brad. I apologize.
You're good, man. I was just kind of talking. feel like puking.
Yeah.
It's one of those ones. Felt like the Browns outplayed the Seahawks today, guys. I really do. Thought they outplayed them.
So the way I was thinking about it, framing it, when I was just getting my glass of water and apparently making myself late for the show, which I set the time for, which is hard to do. if you say when it should start and then you're late, that's not the most professional look. So I apologize to everybody, both in front of the camera and behind the camera. But I am going to stay hydrated, which is, you know, that's a big part of this game. Right. What I would say, Brad, and the way I was going to kind of kick this off is to say that I think that this game feels a lot like the last two games in that you can say some positive things about the way that the team played, both offensively and defensively. You can criticize some of the things that the coaching staff did, and you can say that, you know, they deserved to win. You can say that they didn't deserve to win. I think, you know, these last few games are a little bit of a Rorschach test here, right, where it comes down to one play, two plays at the end. And, you know, they had a little bit more luck last week and the week before. And they suffered, you know, this week. I mean, like any time a ball hits a helmet, it could go literally anywhere. So the fact that it went
so high.
Yeah, it went. It was basically a pop fly. That was a can of corn at that point. And
it was wild.
You know, if that ricochets to the right, it skitters out of bounds and it's, you know, fourth down and you punt and maybe they score a touchdown anyway. So it's hard to put too much on that one play, but it is also, you know, definitely a turning point in the game. So it's like I said, I think these three games are as close as NFL games can get. They come down to a bounce of the ball literally in every game. And I think sitting with a 2-1 record through this three-game stretch, with all of these games being as tight as they have against these opponents, I think it's probably a fair reflection of where things stand for the Browns.
And it could be worse, right? Like, exactly. I think it certainly could be a missed field goal against San Francisco and a fumble ruling on the illegal contact penalty, and it's an 0-3 stretch here. So, yeah, I mean, if you would have told us way back when into the bye week, 3-1, after the bye week, if they can get this, now everything hinges on Arizona. You have to win that football game, because if you can come out of that 3-1, you feel pretty good at 5-3. You can still go places. Now, I think you would agree with me, glossing over this loss is tough, because they had a lot of opportunity to figure it out, get a win. So let's go to the game's most pivotal moment, right? It's 3rd and 3, ball's out. Let me make sure I have the exact list of you know, outcome here in front of me. I think it's down toward the bottom. So
when you're done, I have a couple other moments.
Yeah,
I want to mention
we'll get
too.
To it, but this is the most important thing people are certainly wanting to talk about.
It
is
3rd and 3
at 2:04, right? 2:04. So you're taking a timeout. just ahead of the 2-minute warning. You come out 2x2. You had been running it pretty well. I want to remind everybody that there was really good run balance in this game. I have wrote about the run game efficiency ahead of the game, about how they were too boom or bust in the run game. And I think you guys would all agree with me. Their shotgun run game was pretty good. It was doing well and doing some nice quarterback reads off of the different designs, right? And they were getting Walker out in space a little bit. He ran 6 times for 27. Jerome Ford, who like came off of like a first half suspension, it was really weird. He just popped up in the game out of nowhere. 9 carries for 37, 4.1 average. Pierre Strong, 10 for 41, 4.1. And then Kareem Hunt had 14 for 55 and essentially 4 yards a carry for him. So they were running with efficiency. It's 3rd and 3. Here are your outcomes. You can run it, not get it, punt. Minute and some change left, minute 57, whatever. It'll have been right a little past the 2-minute mark. So a minute 57, you kick it down there. Maybe it's a touchback. Maybe you get it down inside the 10. If you run, you could get a first down because you had been relatively successful running. Or you throw it because you think they're sitting on the run, and then it's an either complete first down, and it's, you know, Seattle, I think, had 2 timeouts at that moment, if I remember correctly. So you had a real chance to, it's not guaranteed to ice it, but you had a real chance to put it away, or it's incomplete. The weirdest outcome of all is that the ball hits off the forehead of Jamal Adams, shoots up in the air 30 feet, lands in the secondary of Seattle without anybody to break it up. Yeah. So the question is, and I think you guys have made the point so far, Kevin called a pretty good game today. Mm-hmm. Is that call the wrong call? The outcome sucks. Ball's at the 40, right? That's like way worse than a punt, obviously, because, again, anything could happen on a punt. I guess it could be returned at the 40, but very unlikely. Where do you guys stand on the call? Andrew, I'll let you go first, then we'll jump to Brad.
Yeah, I'll just add one more other thing, which is that if you run the ball or get a few yards there, you have a chance at a short fourth down if you want to make very that aggressive call. Call as well, which we've seen Stefanski do that in other situations. This would have been a pretty high leverage moment to decide to go for a fourth down, but he could have, you know. So
I will say, if he'd have, okay, so they run it there, 2-minute warning, you come out 4th and 1 and you pick it up.
Right.
That's an addition. That's the, I mean, it's, they say 2nd and short is the place to be, right? But like that first down would have then burnt another timeout to get the first down. Then you have a first down, right? 1 Seattle timeout.
Yeah.
And now,
yeah. So, based on that, based on the possibility of setting up a fourth down, go for it situation, if you're 6 inches to 1 foot to 2 feet short, I would prefer a run there, because I don't think a run there that falls short necessarily means you're punting. So it you still have options there. So that would be my preference. They were running the ball well. I still understand you cannot call the game scared when you have a backup quarterback. Just because you're a backup quarterback, you can't remove the pass from the game. But in that sort of a situation, I would prefer to take the ball out of a quarterback who has struggled against pressure and who has struggled to make reads all game. He threw a few nice balls, but if he's not seeing it right away, the process gets really bogged down. So that, to me, tells me I want to run that ball.
Brad, go ahead.
Yeah, I thought they were going to run it. I prefer they would have ran it there with the same thought process in mind, that if you get it close enough, it's one of those situations where you get in the huddle and you say, guys, we've got 1 foot to win this game, basically, right? And the way that we've been getting push and running the ball all game long, you feel like you might be able to achieve that. I'll mention it. That's just where I was with that. And I'm not going to kill Stefanski for throwing it. That's fine. That's what he thought they had to do there. You know, really, PJ, there was an open player. You know, it's just he gets locked in on a read, it appears, before the play, and he's not going to get off that read, right?
Which is part of why you run the ball.
That's the tell, because right there was the 3rd down on the goal line where he has the shallow from Elijah Moore, but he locked into the back shoulder ball, and he knew it off the field. He pointed it himself. He actually did a nice job after that of coming down to one of those to Elijah Moore, but he's clearly got a habit of doing this because, again, when you're a backup quarterback and the game's moving fast and you're 5'10 and everything's kind of chaos in front of you sometimes, you just want to get the ball out. I don't want to take a sack, right? I don't want to take a sack. That's the worst thing I can do. So I want to get the ball out. It was pretty clear you want to get the ball out there. So, you know, to your point, both of you guys, I think, said it right. It's unfortunate because I thought Kevin called a really good game. He did a great job scheming stuff all game, and this decision is sort of the crux of the game. And I too would have run it. I would have used it two downs to get 3 yards. Reminder of runs that happened before this: 6 yards, 5 yards, 4 yards. It was first and 10. They got a 2 yard run from PJ Walker on a pull off of a read. And then they got a 5 yard run from Pierre Strong off left tackle. So you're sitting third and three. Probably would have gone the direction of running the football there. And largely because, and I'm fine with it if you have a dog at quarterback, if you got a real dude, yep, like no problem sure with that. But if you don't, that's risky. And again, risky because he's given you enough evidence now to tell you he really can't handle those moments. Because if you guys watch the replay, that ball was not getting caught. They're running a slant with an under and out, a popular concept. So it's a 2x2 concept, right? And what you'll see is teams will run a RPO where they'll read it and they'll have a slant to throw off the back, the inside linebacker. And then they'll have a what's called an under route paired off of it. He locked onto the under. I can't tell you. It wasn't an RPO because there was no run look to him or whatever. He was locked into the under route, and it might have been caught, but it was, they were sitting on it. They were sitting on it. Now, the backside running back, I think, leaked out. Ford. It's really hard to get to that when you have a free runner. Jamal Adams is a free runner, yep, off of the right side protection. So you would have had to make him miss. Not impossible. Had to have made him miss. Pump fake. Maybe you make him miss. And then you could maybe check that down or run for it. But again, this is who PJ Walker is. I'm sure Kevin's going to be up all night frustrated with himself for making that call. But again, I think we could safely say it was the wrong call. I just wanted to walk through all of the thought process around it. I'm sure Kevin thought if we throw it and we don't get it caught, I can punt it down to the inside the 20-yard line, make them go the whole field on our defense, which at this point had been playing lights out. They gave up 17 first quarter points and hadn't given up a single point since then. But the way that that ball gets hit off the helmet, it gets intercepted, the energy changes, it takes one play to get them into field goal range. You could feel the defense just not meeting that moment. And it's largely because, again, the momentum shift that happened there. So I know we have some other moments we want to get to. I just thought that moment is obviously the singular driving moment of the game. And I think if we walked it back and gave Kevin a chance to run through that whole mental process again, he would choose a different route. But I will say, guys, and you could probably agree with me, he in these third and shorts has been going to PJ Walker and throw decisions a lot. And I would like to ask him, what's giving you the confidence to do that right now? Because he's not meeting you in the middle on those right now. Spike the ball to the left side flat. Did he misread? Again, we talked about the goal line back shoulder that he threw, and I'm sure there are some others just that's, fresh.
Wasn't
off
that sack fumble remember in the first quarter? Wasn't that?
Yeah, where you could third see, quarter, yeah, I'm literally sitting there. I'm like, hey, I said slot pressure. He's cheating. Yep. Like, if this was on Amazon Prime, it would have been red obvious circle underneath him. He didn't see it. Nobody touches him. Strip sack. So, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I think Kevin has done some really, really good things, but there's clearly a lot of trust in PJ Walker to process, deliver, in not just in advantageous moments, but like serious game deciding moments. And you know, PJ's turning it over too much. It's a problem. The three turnovers cost you that game. So there you go. And Brad, I know you have some things you want to hit on, so we can jump to you.
I just wanted to say, take it one possession earlier where the Browns have the ball. They're driving down the field. They've ran the ball pretty heavily. They've converted a few third downs. They're at the 40-yard line of the Seahawks going in, and it's the same situation. It's third and three. There is where I want to see them go. We have two downs, especially where we are on the field. We have two downs to get a first down here, go in and score. That's a kill shot at that point. If you score on that drive and you're moving the ball and you have momentum and the crowd is somewhat quieted because of the way you're moving the ball down the field. I mean, you're taking their will with your run game at that point, right? Like, you're getting 3-4 a pop every time on that drive. That they throw it. He throws it in the dirt at Ford's feet in the flat, which may have been a first down. That's fine.
But even though it would have been short again, and it could have been a fourth and one or two, right?
So, correct. Yeah. Correct. But I just would have liked to have seen them approach that down even more aggressively than this last one with run again. We have two downs to get 3 yards. We're getting 4 a pop on this entire drive. Let's go get the first down. Let's go win the game, play to win instead of not to lose. Right. And it felt like that he threw it at his feet and then they punted it away from the 40, and I was kind of like, that's it for that drive. Like, that felt like the drive of the game where you go win the game to me.
Yeah, and I'll say that they were at that moment in that drive running with relative efficiency. They had popped a 12. They popped a 4. They end up running for 2 on 2nd and 6 to get it to 3rd and 4. So, like, then you come back out again and you establish some more good run game rapport at the 5-minute mark I was just talking about. I just thought the feel of the game as you wore into this wasn't the Colts game where they were putting themselves in good first down positions and then having too many negative outcomes on 2nd down from the run game. You could really feel that they had a real way of either, I have to rewatch what schemes they were using, but I feel like they had a real feel for how to knife between A gap to A gap with some backside B gap pop stuff happening from the gun, having Walker read it here and there. I just thought that they missed a feel for the game in that moment and in 2 of those moments. Right. And maybe again, Kevin had a real stern belief that I have to think that his mind was saying, if we throw an incomplete pass here, we'll punt it and we'll win this game with our defense. But
yep.
It's a miscalculation for what they were doing well in the feel of that game. And again, the quarterback. And I think that there's going to have to be some self-reflection about how he's treating the quarterback right now, because it's hurting them, Andrew. It's really hurting them.
Well, and I think it segues into the next thing that I wanted to talk about, which is, you know, with the trade deadline on Tuesday, there's obviously a lot of speculation out there about if the Browns make a move there. There are varying reports on Watson's readiness, his health. Some suggestion that he might be back next week, but I think, based on what I saw last week against Indianapolis, I think that would be hasty to expect him back next week against Arizona. So, and I think the other question is, it's not clear based on, you know, how they've diagnosed this injury that a full recovery is going to be possible in the scope of the season. So in terms of that, so I think it's a question about, you know, if there is a player that is available to them for the right price that could come in on fairly short notice and allow them a little bit more balance in the pass game in those sorts of situations. Because Jake, you're right that it does appear that the head coach trusts PJ Walker, arguably more than he should. If they had a better option, maybe that player would be able to cash in some of that trust on those plays and keep them on the field in that situation. I know that next week is a relatively easy game against the Cardinals, who are now 1-7, I believe, but there's no guarantees in the NFL. Beyond that, the schedule, you know, has 2 divisional games. So, Brad, I'll go back to you. If you're Andrew Berry sitting in the office in Berea over the next 2 days, how hard are you pushing to add a quarterback to this roster?
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You don't want to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down!
Walk right up to the side.
A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes now streaming. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with the Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. The subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
I feel like it's too late, Andrew. I feel like if you're going to do that, you needed to do it earlier. And I feel like at this point, I don't know. I guess because we don't know what's going to happen with Watson, ultimately, you have to answer all those calls and take a hard look at it. But I'll just say this. I don't think they're going to do anything.
No, I agree with that, but I don't, that's less interesting to me. I'm more interested in what you would do.
I would take a hard look. I would answer the calls, but I think it's too
knocking down anybody's door.
I'm not knocking down anybody's door just because I think it's too late. I think you needed to do this a couple weeks ago.
Right. Jake, same question to you, man. Muted.
The problem is we don't know the timeline on Watson still. We're sitting here being told he's 2 weeks away. And I, guys, like, how am I supposed to feel confident that he's 2 weeks away? I'm watching him celebrate with only his left hand on the sideline. Like,
classic,
I just
left hand fist pump. That's how I celebrate.
I just don't understand. Okay, you're right, Brad. It is too late. If you had diagnosed the injury correctly before the Ravens game and you had a prognosis that told us 4 to 6 weeks, at that moment, you could probably get hyper-aggressive to try to find somebody that could really bridge that gap over that six-week span to give him enough time to get right. There still feels like there's this need to get him right, but the timeline won't allow for it. So, like, you're up against the wall here with, and that's why today was so vital, because you would just like to sort of stack these games that you maybe had no business winning. And I think you guys would all agree with me, when they were down 17-7 or 14-0 early, it felt like, boy, we are about to get whitewashed here. And I will give Kevin and his staff and the players a ton of credit. They fought back like crazy and really dominated the middle chunk of this game, to the point that, I mean, outside of the first 11 minutes of the game, guys, maybe 12 or 13, I can't remember how many seconds were left in the first quarter after that field goal, and the last drive of the game, they controlled this football game. That's what's the most disheartening about it. The loss angle here is that they controlled a lot of this thing. But again, I think there's a mixture of things here that you're right about, Brad. It does feel too late, because if you give up something valuable for a quarterback that then ultimately isn't going to play for you because maybe Watson does come back healthy, then you feel like you wasted more assets on the idea of what is Deshaun Watson, which is really hard because we haven't seen the net return on anything they've given him, right? And then also on the other hand, you could sit here and tell me, Jake, we have to do it because we don't know when this guy's coming back, right? Because we still don't know. You're getting Adam Schefter tweeting about it. You're getting all these people saying different things. And it's like, I'm supposed to have confidence that Deshaun Watson from the Colts game that is leaning against the arm, it can't do anything, is going to just come back and be better than PJ Walker. I don't have that faith. You might disagree with me, and that's okay. But the faith and belief in that is not there. And especially considering how Kevin's playing, you know, he's giving his quarterback reads, he's doing different things to put the game in his lap. Like, I have a serious question about whether, you know, I've been saying this for a couple of weeks. I know, you know, Andrew, maybe you've heard me say it, Brad, but we have this belief that getting Deshaun Watson back gets you the best version of Deshaun Watson back. That's not the case. We have the Tennessee game. He started to put it together, but we have what we saw in Indy and a guy who's really hurt. So how do you have this belief he's ultimately going to come back and be better than PJ, who again made some real throws in this game? You know, he threw 15 of 31. That's not good enough. A couple picks and a fumble. But he had some real throws in the game too. Like, do you think you're getting a significantly better version of dinged up, rotator cuff damaged Watson than that? Like that. So that's where it's like, we want to believe the solution is sitting out there, and we just don't know that to be a fact. So it is very tempting to entertain the idea of calling and talking about a quarterback. There's only one. It is Jacoby Brissett, largely because there's familiarity with the verbiage, the system, the coach. All of it is, it's like Kareem Hunt in a sense. The only difference between him and Kareem Hunt is that Kareem Hunt didn't go learn a new system, right? So Jacoby goes and learns, you know, Eric Bieniemy's system, all of that that comes with that. So you'd have to wipe the slate clean and go back to doing what he did with Kevin, but there's familiarity. If you trade for somebody else, now we saw the big swing that everyone wanted to talk about was Kirk Cousins, but that was a really sad situation with his Achilles tear today. There's just not enough time to feel comfortable. What I'm saying by that is, like, you're trying to weigh all outcomes, and there is an outcome where Deshaun is back in 2 or 3 weeks, and then you gave up your second or third round pick to get that done, and then you're like, okay, now we have a quarterback that's just sitting on the bench for the rest of the season. So there's just more into it than a Madden trade that just, like, he comes in and he starts for you right away, right? So the only option is Brissett, but it feels to me like that even is riskier than you want it to be, because Washington does hold all the leverage, right? And I'm not certain who a guy who hasn't played this year is just going to come in sharp, clean, and ready to go. So there's a lot more to this than we want to admit. I think Brad's right about his timeline statement. I'm just looking ahead at the timeline, and it's so murky that I don't feel good about any of those moves. And there's only one player that's even worth having a conversation about. And I do think that we're playing a little bit of hero ball in how we remember Jacoby, who was good at he'd be fine. I do think he'd be fine, but is his fine that much better than PJ Walker? I'm just saying, I'm not convinced the way he hasn't played this year and a lot of those elements that it's just worth that swing. So maybe, listen, they got DTR involved a little bit today. Maybe they're going to try to reel him in and into some more situations, and they'll give him an opportunity to play a very controlled style too. But as of right now, guys, this is the hand they're dealt. You got to beat the Cardinals, go to the Ravens game. You hope that Deshaun is healthier, or you just keep limping around. You just got to keep fighting and keep fighting the good fight. That's really the only angle you have that is consistently believable right now.
To your point, I get it. Like, we have no idea what Watson is going to be, or in likely not healthy version of Watson, and the healthy one hasn't been good enough yet, right, for the most part, outside of one game. And we also don't know, like, how long this injury thing is going to go. And I guess that's my thing, is, like, he could come back and play one game again, and we could be looking at two or three more weeks because he gets hit wrong on it, or maybe he doesn't recover, you know, even come close to being effective again the rest of this season because of the injury. So in that case, this is your last opportunity to make a move. So I hear both sides. I'm torn, right? I'm torn. Mm-hmm. Because you make some good points about, we don't know. We have no idea what the outcome is on the other side. And that this sense that he is the answer and it's sitting there it's a great point. We don't know that at all.
I don't want to oversell what Jacoby Brissett is as a quarterback, because I think, you know, he played his best football of his career with the Browns last year. So the chances of him being able to recapture that for the however many games he would be involved, I think are, you know, that's the big question. But I do think there's two components that I'm interested in here. One is that I think he has less of a propensity to turn the ball over, which is killing them. Every game that PJ Walker has played so far, the turnovers are absolutely murdering them from an efficiency standpoint, because they're getting the ball into scoring territory and then handing it over to the other team. And you can say, like, that can't happen. This is who PJ Walker is, right? This is what he does. So that part is, I think, the biggest thing for me, is that you've got your two options right now are a PJ Walker player, you know, a PJ Walker that we have seen how he turns the ball over, or a rookie in Dorian Thompson Robinson, who also is pretty turnover prone. And so that's the component. And then I think the other component is there's much more clarity, just like there was clarity with the Kareem Hunt move. And it gives you a sort of a veteran answer, a steadiness in that room. Jacoby Brissett would provide the same thing for the quarterback room and for the leadership on that side of the, because the part that is killing the Browns right now is that they don't know week to week who their quarterback is going to be, right? Because we're about to do this all over again this week with Arizona. We won't get any clarity tomorrow. And then maybe Kevin Stefanski will make a decision Wednesday. More likely, we'll probably have to wait this week until Sunday. So that is, I think, it makes things harder on the team in total. And I think having a player who is much more comfortable in a last-minute starting capacity like Jacoby Brissett is going to help in terms of steadying the ship. So I am not interested in trading a future first-round pick for Jacoby, and it's possible that the Commanders don't want to trade him, in which case there's nothing you can do. But I think I would be pretty aggressive in trying to figure out a win-win trade that gives the Commanders an asset that they can use to improve their team, while at the same time giving a quarterback to the Browns that can kind of steady this ship. Because even if, Jake, to your point, even if Watson comes back for 2 weeks and re-aggravates his shoulder, the Browns are in a position right now where you would be going back to PJ Walker. It feels up in the air again. There's a much higher level of trust and calmness around the building if Jacoby Brissett is that guy coming back into the game.
What are you willing to give up for him?
I mean, I think, you know, typically Barry likes to do a pick swap or something like that, but I would definitely be willing to give up a fourth round pick. You know, I mean, they got a fifth for Dobbs. If you have to get into the third territory, things get pretty pricey. But I also, where the Browns are at, the players are more valuable to them than the draft picks. Like, I know that they're in cap trouble and down the road they're going to need draft picks, but the chances of a third round pick ever contributing to a team in the way that Jacoby Brissett is going to contribute to this team this year, if he comes in my opinion, that's worth the trade. But I would be pretty aggressive.
Let's shift tone a little bit here. So the Browns defense has given up 12 plays of 20 yards in the last 2 weeks. Coming into last week, they had given up 11 plays total on the season of 20 plus yards. So the question is, I think Geno Smith has been fool's gold this season. There are people that were telling me he was playing pretty well, and I'm like, I'm not seeing it. And he proved it again today. I thought he was really rough. The Browns gave away some opportunities, letting him get out of the pocket and create. That was really frustrating. They have, and I know the Browns have a free plan to get to the quarterback. You know, you do whatever you need to do to get there, but you also can't let quarterbacks, because you're all clustered into the middle trying to hit a spin move or a swim or whatever, just escape laterally out of the pocket for free vision throws. Like, that's something they have to really start honing in on a little bit as they talk about pass rush plan. But Kenneth Walker goes 8 carries for 6. I'm actually stunned looking at the stat line. He only runs 8 times. He runs for 66 yards. Zach Charbonnet only runs 5 times for 53 yards. Those two averaged 8.3 and 10.6 yards per carry. It's kind of crazy. The Browns ran 20 more plays than Seattle. Seattle had a 6.6 per play. The Browns had a 5.1. Browns had the football 13 and a half more minutes than Seattle. So the explosive plays that teams are putting on the board. Now, the Browns, again, it was a yin and yang situation, sort of the same way as last week was, where it was turnovers were created. And the Browns did create 2 turnovers, 2 interceptions in this one. They dropped a third one, which, as we all know, sitting here right now, when it was 17 all, looms pretty large. When Cam Mitchell had that football, he jumped up the left sideline. It would have made for a completely different tone of the game. But I think that there's a question of the run game stuff, why it's happening, right? They're giving up way too many big runs. I think there were 3 runs or 4 runs over 12 yards today. I think there were 3 of the 4 over 20. Those are concerning. And, you know, the pass game stuff was relatively okay. I thought the scramble drill stuff is where Tyler Lockett was at his best. They did a pretty good job. I'll give Martin Emerson real credit. 5 catches on 14 targets is all DK Metcalf was able to put together, 67 yards. I guess what I'm getting at, the big play stuff, they don't feel comfortable in zone coverage to me. Do you guys notice it? They feel very...
Yeah, it jumps off the screen.
Very much unsettled in how to handle coverage with zone stuff, and that is leading to some big plays. And I'm concerned. I know we had talked about this, Andrew, throughout last week about we don't think they're historically good. You know, I didn't think it was sustainable. You were playing some bad offenses in those stretches of games. But this stuff with the big plays is a concern, because it doesn't feel like they're in the last 2 weeks, although they only gave up 24 and had a chance to win. And I'm giving them credit while also saying the big plays are really what is hurting their ability to keep a team under, in this case, 24 points, right? And I know the offense turned it over 3 times. I'm fully aware of this stuff here. It's not like I'm saying the defense cost them this game, but I think there's a trend, you guys would agree with, the trend of big plays. They shot themselves in the foot in the first quarter really quickly. And I don't even know if I have a question so much as I'm just seeking like your analysis of it, where you sit on the defense. We'll go to you first, Brad.
I agree with you. It's what you said about the zone, and Andrew said, it jumps off too. I think that like there are times when you see them communicate at the line of scrimmage. You see like the secondary and the linebackers, and they look like they're all communicating and they know they're all on the same page. In the second half, we saw this at times, right? And it looks like they're communicating really well. And then those plays usually end up well, right? Like they end up like doing a good job on those plays. But there are other plays that you're talking about when they are clearly in zone, and it just appears they have a tough time, you know, handing guys off through responsibility efficiently, I guess, from zone to zone, without leaving huge gaps in the field, right? Or huge places to sit down in the field. And it's ending up in a lot of big plays. I thought they didn't get early, especially they didn't get home enough or pressure the quarterback enough in this game. And they eventually got there, but and Miles got there, you know. What you're saying is true. I don't blame the defense for this game. I thought they played pretty well, but too many explosive plays. Yeah, I think it's probably a product of I don't know. They do some silly. Sometimes Juan Thornhill takes some ridiculous angles. Even on that last play of the game, I thought that was a like the where he gets in the end zone. That was a little. I don't know why he came up the field that way. You know what I mean? I felt like they should have got. They needed to get more pressure early. Other than that, I thought they played pretty well. You're right about the explosives and the zone stuff. I mean, I don't have a lot of complaints about the defense other than the way they came out of the game. I would just say they came out and started the game extremely flat-footed, and they looked not ready to play early.
Andrew, you same to you.
Yeah, I think the thing that's becoming clear is that they're not going to be a defense that's going to win you games on their own every week, right? That, I mean, what Miles did last week is the exception rather than the rule, where he's creating points on his own, both, you know, by blocking a field goal, by strip sack in the end zone, all those sorts of things. That's not a week to week thing. Now, obviously the Cam Mitchell pick six would have been the exception of that, but that's the whole point, right? Is that those plays don't happen sometimes. And then that leaves you in a position where you're wishing that it would have happened, because obviously that wins the game. But they did turn the ball over, which is good. They've continued to do that over the past few weeks. I do just think that, you know, the defense is playing well enough to win if the Browns can put together more consistent offensive performances. And I think the explosive plays are a problem insofar as they are giving up too many of them, and then they're making some of those drives for the Seahawks in the first quarter were very easy, right? They were not having to do much to get in the end zone. I don't mind a boom or bust defense, I guess, philosophically, right? Because you're going to create some turnovers, you're going to create some pressure, but you also maybe occasionally get gashed. I'm all right with that trade-off. The part that I'm struggling with is that it feels like they at times have struggled to show up in those moments. You know, I think if Jake Moody hits that field goal against the 49ers,
bingo,
we're kind of starting to feel like, okay, are they able to really like win games for this team? And so that's the concern that I have. And that's where the explosive plays being given up more readily, then you start to feel like when the Seahawks got the ball on that pick, I didn't have, my concern was keep them from a touchdown. I was already conceding the field goal, right? Because you know they're going to be able to move the ball. The Browns do not have, clearly, the type of defense that's just going to smother teams. It's more about opportunistic creating havoc, which can work, but it really is built for a team with a strong offense, because then you get a lead and you turn them loose. And in these tight games, they sometimes can end up being a liability.
Yeah, when you look at some of those games that they have played their best defensively, it feels like, I'll look at the statistics, but again, they're a higher volume of man coverage, partly because they find their way to be in the lead for a majority of, and they were right there or in the lead for a majority of this game too. You're right. Really bummed out that they're not meeting some of those moments, because you're right. If Moody hits that field goal, it's certainly a different vibe around them getting off the field. And, you know, the 40-yard line, just inside the 40-yard line, isn't, you know, it's not great situation, but you can still give up a couple first downs, right, and have a chance and to get chunk played a couple times in a row, and especially to watch Fant run up the sideline, sort of reminiscent of that Broncos game all those years back that just bringing back bad memories where he's breaking tackles. So, yeah, I agree. They're good enough to win. They're certainly good enough to be a top 10 defense, but they do have to find some answer to some of the big play stuff here that I think is hindering the outcomes. They did a good job today of getting off the field on third downs, whereas the Colts last week were 7 of 15. This week they were only 4 of 12, Seattle was, right? And they created a couple turnovers, you know, obviously a great play for Martin Emerson to create that first turnover, and then the second interception. Help me out with the second interception. Where am I? Oh, it was Maurice Hurst, just an unbelievable play on a fire zone there, dropping into coverage. So, I mean, the defense to me, they didn't.
I mean, they went like 6 or 7 straight three and outs, yeah, didn't they?
They were good enough to win this game. I think you define a great defense, you guys would agree with me. It's a really good defense. A great defense in that moment today needed to do it again, right? Mm-hmm. And they were unable to sort of step up to that challenge the same way in the San Francisco game, but they got the fortune of a missed kick. So, but again, the three turnovers, everything's in their lap, right? Everything is in their lap. So, it's really tricky. It's really tricky. I'm not in any way. No one's blaming the defense. It's just a conversation worth having when you've seen the explosive plays that have hit recently. So, well, right, let's go ahead.
I think the other thing just to say about that is that they're getting schemed up a little bit more, right? Mm-hmm. We saw that last week with Steichen for sure, and I'm quite certain that the tape will reveal the same thing this week with Waldron. So the book is starting to get out, so they got to find some adjustments.
Especially in the first quarter, right? Like coming out, and then they were able to make some adjustments really strong from there. 2 weeks in a row. But the scripted stuff, they're finding some things that work early, especially.
Yep. Let's close on this. Your sense of urgency or like calm or panic. Let's go calm panic. How you're feeling about where they're at after this game and what's looming ahead? Because if I remember correctly, they have Arizona, which is there is no easy game in the NFL, but it's certainly winnable. And then they get Baltimore on the road, and then they get Pittsburgh at home. Really important three games. Two of those are division games. So are you feeling calm about where they are despite this outcome and their ability to get to 2-1 in the next three? Or are you feeling panicked about their ability to get to 2-1 the next three? We'll go to you, Andrew.
I don't feel panicked, but I also don't feel calm. So I'm right in the middle. And I would just say uneasy, and the uneasiness all stems from the quarterback situation, because it's very hard to win in the NFL without a quarterback, right? So if you look at those three games, I feel okay about their chances next week against Arizona, but then those next two games, on the road to Baltimore is going to be incredibly difficult. And then the Pittsburgh game in Cleveland, we know how that goes, right? And we know what the Pittsburgh defense does to the Browns. They are always going to be ready for it. So, you know, from a trajectory of the season standpoint, I think you got to figure out a way to win two of those games. Ideally, the home games makes the most sense, right? But the big thing for me is just the sense of unease, because until the quarterback situation is resolved in some meaningful sense, I'm going to be uneasy. It might mean that I'm uneasy the rest of the season.
Yeah. As I'm sitting here and thinking about it, so I said earlier I wouldn't make a move on quarterback, but as I'm sitting here thinking about it, you may have changed my mind. But I'm thinking about the fact that if everything goes well, like what would make me calm in this situation? Would Deshaun Watson being healthy next week make me calm? Certainly not. That would not make me calm. I would still be just as worried about our quarterback play then as I am with PJ Walker. So I guess that means there has to be a door number three, right?
I think, you know, even if Watson can get back to where he was at the beginning of this season, even not saying the Tennessee game, but just even the beginning of this season, I think that I would be okay with that. I would take that at this point. I think that's still better than what PJ Walker has been doing.
Oh, of course. If the Tennessee game was good, it was good. But again,
I'm saying before, like even the ups and downs of Cincinnati.
No. Yeah. Totally right. Totally right. I mean, because those three are so close together. The Pittsburgh game is like, we watched at times Jacksonville over there. Just it happens to everybody in Pittsburgh. I don't even know what to say. But go ahead, Brad.
I don't know if you can count on that though.
I agree. But I'm just saying if he's healthy.
I am firmly planting my flag that there is nothing that we should believe with Deshaun Watson right now. It is a lotto ticket for the rest of the season.
If he came back against Arizona and was throwing the ball normally.
Sure.
I'm not saying I could predict that he would be good the rest of the season, but I could predict that the quarterback shuffling is over for now. Just to see him be able to do the process of throwing the football. That's how low the bar is for him at this point. That would reduce my level of unease.
Yeah, I'm not calm. I'm not panicked either. But I'd say if I had to pick, I'm closer to panicked than I am calm. I'd say that, you know, just because of if I didn't think this team couldn't be really good, Andrew, Jake, then I wouldn't be this panicked. I'm panicked because you see the talent, you see what's potentially there, them outplay the Seahawks today and not win because of some silly, silly shit, right? Like some silly shit again. And, you know, years prior, losing games like this didn't mean as much because you didn't think that, you know, the ultimate outcome, the ceiling wasn't there. But the ceiling is there with this team. I just don't know. I don't know how you achieve it without a real quarterback.
Yeah, that's what makes this year so unfortunate, is even if, again, if you get Deshaun back, you're still dealing with it all season. This is the third year in a row of dealing with quarterback uncertainty, and it's like you're watching players that are core parts of this team spend 3 years going through this, and 3 years is a damn near lifetime for some NFL players. So that part of it is what sucks the most. I am with you guys. I feel some optimism from this game because I really thought they put themselves in a lot of good places and Kevin was dialed in. It does suck that it comes down to a couple moments at the end of that game where they had a chance to ice it away and didn't get it done. So I, again, some optimism there. Certainly don't ever feel good about losing a game you had a real shot at winning, and really you probably look at the sort of structure here. They should have won that game. I don't know what the probabilities were, but I'm sure they were favored to win that game at various points in this one. So that part of it stinks. It looks like Dobbs has been announced as a starter next week. You're not going to see Kyler Murray, Jonathan Gannon, the coach of the Cardinals, who's making his return back to his roots up in Cleveland, confirm that. So that was one element that was sort of lingering out there. The Browns have a real chance to win. And if they get to 5-3, the tone shifts and you have two division games with a lot of things you want right in front of you, right? You never know in these division games what's going to happen. I will just say again, they can't control the circumstances of what's going on with Deshaun Watson, but they can control their attitude, their effort, and how hard they're playing. And I would say that the coaching staff is really, really deserving of being commended for how hard the guys are playing, the effort they're showing, and putting themselves in the position to win some tough football games with really porous quarterback play. So hopefully there's a shift in thought process around how they handle the quarterback play stuff with a backup, a guy who's a little more limited. Hopefully we can see that adjust. Can't sit here and promise that's going to happen, but I would like to see that stuff adjust. But anything on the way out the door, guys, before we shut this episode down, that you want to sort of echo out to people before we, like I said, sign out?
I think the point that you made, Jacob, sorry, Brad, the point that you made, Jake, about the running game coming along is that's big news, right? Because if they can, whoever the quarterback is, whichever, you know, weird quarterback situation we get stuck with next week and in the weeks to come, if they can run the ball reliably and efficiently, not boom, bust, you know, 6 yards on first down, -4 on second, that changes the way that the quarterback has to operate the offense. That's a big development. And the Seahawks are good against the run. So if that sticks, if that's, you know, something that stays with this team, then maybe that alone, Jake, makes it possible for Stefanski to shift some of his play calling in those situations, because he can start to trust that they can get those yards more fully, because they have been poor at times this year in those sorts of obvious run situations. And I understand moving away from it, but if they're back in that way, that's a big development for this team, because it's really strong running game and this defense is enough to make the playoffs.
Right on, Brad.
A play that I'll be interesting to see what you see from Jake, and you might even be able to tell me now, whenever you do. Are you doing Chalk Talk tomorrow?
What's the plan? If all things go according to schedule, yeah, we'll try to get to it.
Yeah, well, whenever you do it, I'll be interested to see on the play that they got bailed out on the last drive, the third down that he threw to Cooper, where he appeared to be wide open. And threw to the wrong side. Did he throw to the wrong side of him coming out of his break? I don't know. It looked like he would have gone for 70 yards and a touchdown if he throws it properly. But they got the hands to the face call. I'll be interested to see what happens there. If you listen to me and Jake's game day podcast, for the first time ever, Jake, every single leg of the parlay hit. So if you played it, you cashed $140. So you're welcome.
There you go. Right on. Right on. So listen, hey, on the way out the door, Kevin's going to take a lot of heat for this game. He should. The third down decision was rough, and it doesn't feel to me that a lot of what he did in the game will get recognized, but the scrutiny is real, and he'll have to deal with that. We'll see what his answers are. We'll cover everything we can for you from the OBR's perspective, Chalk Talk, various shows throughout the rest of the week. We'll get you everything you need and have some write-ups on the game as well. So for you guys who hung out, about 300 of you, I really appreciate you guys hanging out here, being around. Obviously, like I said, it felt like there's some good within the bad, right? The yin-yang we were talking about earlier, good within the bad. We'll talk about how they get to 5-3, and there should still be off the season. It's not over. It's not over. A lot of things to be defined for this year still. So thanks for everybody hanging out. To Andrew and Brad for coming by as well. To Ian in the background doing the great work that he does, the tremendous work that he does. We appreciate it. Go watch some Sunday night football. Unwind. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday night. Thanks for being here, guys. Have a good one. Go Browns.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.